a ballot initiative that would raise the minimum wage for some workers in SeaTac to $15 an hour could mark a major change in the larger labor movement strategy in the United States. Nationally, the number of workers in unions has declined from a peak of about 35% in 1954 to just over 10% today. That downward spiral has led to much soul-searching and discussion among union leaders in recent decades about how to reverse the trend, and some observers detected a strategic shift in the latest AFL-CIO convention held in Los Angeles last week. At that meeting, union leaders like Tim Paulson, who's the executive director of San Francisco AFL-CIO, spoke in favor of collective bargaining through ballot measures. David Rolfe heads the Service Employees International Union in Washington State. SEIU is backing SeaTac's minimum wage ballot initiative.
Congressman Adam Smith reflected this week that when his father was a baggage handler at SeaTac, that was a middle-class job. Today, that's a minimum wage job. So we literally see the same jobs, jobs which, by the way, cannot be exported, turned into poverty wage jobs, which means that in that community, the QFC becomes Goodwill and the Blockbuster Video becomes a pawn shop.
And Rolfe explained what's behind this strategy for labor moving forward at the ballot box.
This spirit of innovation and incubation of new models that we're seeing here in Seattle and elsewhere around the country, but particularly on the West Coast, I think is a sign that workers are hungry for economic justice, but that the tools of the 1930s industrial economy don't really fit today's workplace.
We also asked the president of the Washington Labor Council, Jeff Johnson, to talk about the trend.
We've got a number of unions and councils and state federations like mine that are supporting a whole number of worker organizing drives that, you know, won't result necessarily in traditional collective bargaining agreements, and that's okay because the more workers that have a voice at work, the stronger the whole workforce becomes.
Johnson offered another example of alternatives to traditional collective bargaining. Workers at Casa Latina, a day labor center based in Seattle. Johnson explained why the State Labor Council has a working agreement with these immigrant employees, even though they're not unionized.
Here's a group of workers that desperately need to organize, but they're not ready to organize into a union. Okay, and may never be. But when they have a strong voice at the workplace, I mean, they effectively, collectively bargain with employers out there, setting a wage minimum standard for them and work quality standards.
That was Jeff Johnson, president of the Washington Labor Council, joining us with more on what these changes really mean and what's happening with the labor movement both here and around the country is Stephen Greenhouse. He's the New York Times labor reporter. Stephen Greenhouse, thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
Nice to be here.
Normally, when I think of collective bargaining as a negotiation between labor and management over things like wages, insurance, workplace safety. So what does it mean that labor is now talking about collective bargaining through ballot measures?
I tend to agree with you, Marcy. I mean, labor's saying that workers in America do not have enough of a voice, that they're being totally dominated by business, and as a result, you know, wages for the typical middle-class American have been going down. We saw these, you know, horrible figures from the Census Bureau 2-3 days ago showing that the typical American household is earning less than in 1989, 24 years ago, that the typical household income is down 9% from 1999. So, you know, the unions are saying something is seriously broken here, that wages are down, family income is down, at the same time that corporate profits are at records or near records and the stock market, you know, is hitting records again. So the unions are saying they have to figure out a way to give workers a greater voice. Now, traditionally, as you say, Marcy, it's through collective bargaining with the employer. But, you know, as you pointed out, you know, only about 10%, 11% of workers are in unions, less than one-third of what they were a half century ago. So unions are kind of groping for other ways to exert their power to lift wages. And one is through initiatives, referendums like the one at SeaTac to raise wages for everyone working at the SeaTac airport and the nearby hotels and car rental agencies to $15 an hour. Someone like Tim Paulson in San Francisco says that's collective bargaining. Yeah, I wouldn't really call it collective bargaining. It's called kind of the unions and workers using collective pressure to somehow raise wages.
So, Stephen Greenhouse, does that mean that the more traditional way of organizing labor through workplace elections just isn't working anymore, that isn't going to happen as we move forward?
Well, unions are still trying to push ahead to win workplace elections at various workplaces around the country to add to their numbers. And their numbers have dropped from, like, you know, 17.5 million 25 years ago to about 14 million now. So they lost about three, four million members. So they say it's very, very, very hard to get workers, especially at private sector workplaces, to get a majority of them to vote for union. And they say it's not because the workers don't want a union. They say it's because managers improperly pressure workers, threaten them that they might close the plant or close the operation, or they might fire someone who sticks his or her neck out to support a union. You know, business says that's a lot of bunk. They say the reason a majority of workers at many workplaces aren't voting to have a union is workers think that unions are old-fashioned, or they think that they can get what they need without having a union. So unions are, you know, slowly still trying to add members the traditional way by getting, you know, a majority of workers at workplaces to unionize, but that's very often a tough road to hoe. So that's why they're trying these new methods, like the referendum in SeaTac. Last November, there was a referendum in Long Beach, California, where the townspeople of Long Beach approved a referendum that guarantees all hotel workers, everyone who works in a hotel in the city of Long Beach, at least $13 an hour. And the SeaTac referendum is building on that. And if the SeaTac referendum succeeds, you could be darn sure that unions around the country will be trying to replicate that in other cities.
We're talking with Steve Greenhouse, who covers labor for the New York Times. You mentioned Long Beach and SeaTac. How many other places around the country are looking at living wage ballot measures or initiatives or policy changes at the municipal level?
I don't know for sure. I would say several dozen. You know, as your listeners probably know, there was this big fight over the past few weeks in Washington, D.C.,
right,
where labor groups, liberal groups were pushing to get the city council and the mayor to sign a bill that would require big box stores, Walmart, Costco, to pay at least $12.50 an hour. And the city council passed that in the first go-around. Then Mayor Vincent Gray vetoed it, and the city council could not muster enough votes to overcome the veto. So, you know, that was also one of the big living wage fights, like the one we're seeing now in SeaTac. You know, business in SeaTac is saying, if we raise the wage to $15 an hour, that means we're just not going to be able to hire enough people. And they also argue that they're not going to look for entry-level people if they have to pay
right.
$15 an hour. They're going to look, you know, at experienced people in other restaurants, say, to do those jobs.
You know, Stephen Greenhouse, as we're talking, I'm just thinking about we've been doing a week-long series about the jobs recovery here at KUOW, or the lack of recovery, as the case may be. And one of the things that I'm hearing overall as you talk is that, you know, labor has lost members. They're looking new ways to advocate for workers in this country. Do you think that part of the reason that people won't unionize on the job is that there aren't a lot of other jobs to be had if there is some kind of retaliation by their employers?
I do think that's part of it, Marcy. I think when, you know, on one hand, when the economy is doing well and there isn't much unemployment, people are more willing to stick their necks out and that maybe support a union, maybe ask for a raise at the risk of angering one's boss. They're willing to stick their necks out and maybe vote for a union. On the other hand, when the economy is better, there kind of isn't as much of a desire, need to get, you know, because wages are often going up already when the economy is doing better. Now, when the economy is doing pretty poorly and unemployment is high and wages are really going nowhere, people, in theory, you know, should be saying, you know, something's broken here, wages aren't going anywhere, we should band together and form a union. But I think a lot of people are scared. Now, we're seeing this interesting phenomenon, Marcy, you know, these fast food strikes that
mm-hmm.
have been in Seattle
right.
and Cleveland and St. Louis and New York and Boston and Washington, D.C. And it's really unusual that these, you know, these workers making $7.25, $8, $9.19 minimum wage in the state of Washington are saying this is not enough. We cannot support our families on that. We can't, you know, we're not earning enough to go to community college if you want to do that. And I don't know if they're trying to unionize. They're not sure where they're going, but they're just saying, you know, something is wrong. This has to stop, and it's kind of an experimental effort to mobilize workers. Maybe it will result in unionization. Maybe it will take the form of some innovative way to pressure McDonald's and Taco Bell to pay more wages.
Thank you, Stephen. Stephen Greenhouse covers labor for the New York Times. Thanks for speaking with us. I'm Marcy Silman. This is The Record.